I interviewed this guy recently on my other podcast called The Sales Evangelist, and he was talking about how he's making seven figures in sales. Seven figures. Now, this guy doesn't look like you and me, and I know that there are people out there who are generating that type of income in sales. Six figures would be amazing, even five figures. And unfortunately, many people who look like you and me are not taking advantage of it or don't know about it or don't get the opportunities. We want to change that with this podcast. And on today's episode, I'm going to go back into the archives from my other show, The Sales Evangelist. I'm going to share with you with a conversation I had with one of my guests, and she was talking about selling high ticket items. And this is something that we could take advantage of, people of color, and we can make some decent money. Hopefully this episode can help you. Let's go ahead and check it out. Hey, 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 everyone. Welcome to another great episode of Selling in Color. My name is Donald C. Kelly, the Sales Evangelist, and I'm so excited for another great episode. I'm so excited to be here with you today. And on this episode, I'm going to share an interview from a podcast episode that I did for my other show, The Sales Evangelist, a while back. This lady's name is Stephanie Chung, and Stephanie is a coach and she guides and helps individuals. She has a lot of sales experience, marketing, and she's someone that looks like you and me. And the beautiful thing about Stephanie is that she knows how to sell. And we're going to talk about high ticket items and high ticket selling and how can we be more effective at selling that. What does it take to make those things happen? And you can hear her story and hear some of the cool things that she's doing. If this is your first time listening to one of our episodes or watching one of our videos, please consider subscribing and also tell somebody else about it, because only 20% of people who are in professional selling look like you and me. And that's not cool. We want to change that. And I need your help to do so. So please go ahead and share this podcast. If you like it, please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're enjoying the show. Let's go back in the archive and check out this episode with Stephanie. Welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Welcome. Thank you so much, Donald. I appreciate you having me.
Man, I am so stoked to hear from you today. We were talking before we started recording, guys, and we were chatting about planes, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, Donald over here, I love me some nice planes. I love a nice jet. One of my friends was a pilot, so we got a chance to go over and check out the jets that he flies. So I love it. So I'm excited to chat with you and learn a little bit more about you, Stephanie, and your experiences with that. But before we dive into all of the fun stuff, why don't you tell us about your coolest sales experience when you were the actual customer?
Oh my gosh. This just happened to me a couple weeks ago, actually. And I love this gentleman. This guy is my car salesman. Now, you and I both know a lot of car salesmen get very bad raps and quite frankly, take the rest of us down with them, right? So this gentleman, his name is Maury, and the company is called Sewell. They're big here in Texas. It's called Sewell. They have a lot of different dealerships, but yeah. Mine is a Lexus. And so Maury and I've bought a couple of cars from him. And one of the things that's really interesting is I'm the girl that leases cars. So I get a car, you know, new car every 3 years. And that's just kind of who I am. And it fits well for my model. I don't necessarily have to drive really far away. So being able to lease cars is fine, right? Mm-hmm. And I like shiny, sparkly stuff. So new cars every 3 years is fine. But what's really great about what Maury does is, one, he touches base all the time. So within the 3 years, let's be honest, most people, whoever they bought a car from, they won't hear from that person again until it's time to get another car, right?
Exactly.
Maury touches base with me throughout the year all the time. Sometimes he'll just call just to check in. How am I doing? How's my family doing? And things of that nature. Then he'll keep me abreast of any kind of promotions that's going on. And then in this particular case, he called me and said, Steph, Lexus is doing a special offer for certain people and you can get your three, you know, it basically was a special promotion. And he said, so if you want, you can turn in your car early. It's 3 months. You don't have to pay and blah, blah, blah. I'll work up the numbers. And because I trust him so much and my schedule is absolutely insane. So I was like, Maury, you do me a favor. Just, okay, I don't have a whole lot of time to be in this car situation. So I'm going to run in the office. You line up three cars next to each other. I can literally go glance, point out the one I want, sign whatever paperwork I need to do, and I'm out of there, right? And he was like, no problem. So he'd done all the research. As soon as I got there, cars were lined up. This color, that color, this color. Here's what the numbers are going to look like. I went in there, picked out, literally pointed to one car. He's like, great, Mrs. Chung, sign here. We signed it. And he's like, I got a special deal for you. And so my car payments went down like, I don't know, $50 or $60 per month.
What?
Plus I didn't have, now most car people, oh, let's face it, they probably would have taken that to, you know, to profit, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's just an amazing guy. And so the moral of this story, Donald, is the fact of the matter is I usually like to get different cars every 3 years, right? So Jag or Mercedes or whatever. I have been sticking with Lexus, not because I love Lexus cars, because I love Lori. So, and when I was on the private jet side, because I know that you, you're a plane enthusiast like me, that particular company, Sewell, they have such great customer experience and great customer ratings that we and a private jet company went and did research on their company and spent time with their executives to actually understand what is it about your customer service? I mean, you guys just do it well when you think of, you know, the experience as far as buying a car is concerned. And we're able to spend some time with them. And so they're just really top notch and their salespeople are very well trained and they really care about the customer. So anyways, that's my latest and greatest, but I'll probably always buy a Lexus whether I want one or not, just because I'll go wherever Murray is, you know?
So Murray's going to be at Mercedes next month. You know, you're there. You're like, Murray, wherever
you are. I'm so there. I'm chasing Murray around.
No, that's really cool, man, because that shows that it's beyond that's like value to the next level, right? He's built up so much value with you the first time that now it doesn't matter what, you're always with him. And because he keeps top of mind, not in a pesty way, but like, hey, you want to, who else, you know, want to buy some of our stuff? It's more of like, I found this and this could help you and I want to help you. And it seems like that's what makes him so, you know, remarkable.
Absolutely. And I even refer friends to him. I mean, let's face it, at the end of the day, we want to have customers that are our brag team, right?
Oh, yeah.
Out there telling all their friends about us, buying more stuff from us, buying more often from us. And Maury fits that perfectly for me. I do. Anybody that needs a car or thinks about a car or even mentions a car to me, I'm like, oh, you got to go see my guy, Maury. So yes, excellent. Just literally, he's an excellent salesperson. But to your point, it's really about the customer experience, which, you know, sometimes salespeople forget about that piece because they're so focused on closing the deal. But it's really not, that's not what it's about. Especially when you're dealing at a higher level, it's not about just closing the deal. It's about the experience that goes into closing the deal.
Exactly. I mean, people like that is ones that you just can always just love and want to be friends with. And I'm sure you would be friends with Maury outside of the work too, because he's just that type of person, seems like.
Right. Exactly. He's told us stories on how some of his customers, you know, there was one single mom, her car broken down or something. And instead of calling like AAA or the normal people you would call, she called Maury. She called Maury. Right? So, yeah. So it's a great organization. But anyways, that's my latest, coolest experience is being a customer versus on the selling side.
Oh, sweet. Mm-hmm. Well, before we dive in, go any further, I gave a little bit about you in the introduction, but why don't you tell us a little bit more about what you do right now?
Sure. So I'm an executive coach and I'm based here in Dallas, but I have customers literally all over the world. And what companies do is they bring me in, I help them make more money. I help bring more money into their top line sales. And so whether it's a company or even an individual, because sometimes people just hire me on an individual basis, but my two specific focuses and my levels of expertise are based on leadership communication and high ticket selling. And the high ticket selling, though I used to sell private jets, most people don't sell that type of high ticket item. But what companies bring me in for is more along the lines of, it doesn't matter what product you're selling. As long as it's not the cheapest in the space, right, then it's probably a high ticket for your space or your industry. So the goal is what I work with individuals on or companies is to make sure that we can get you maximum dollars so that you can make more money ultimately, whether it's for you personally or for your company. And the focus is really specializing in the elite level of high ticket selling.
Well, this would be perfect because I feel that this, like you said, no matter what you're selling, no matter what your sales experiences would be, you need to make sure that you offer or you need to work smarter, not harder. And yes. I just did an episode on this recently where I was, I had a question that someone was chatting with me and they asked a question and was sharing an experience they had about selling, trying to get like a cheap client just to get a cheap client on. And I know the work they were going through was like so much more than if they were getting for a client at a higher end client. And it just resonates so well with the idea of don't lower your standards, go to what you can truly offer, go for your max and what you're capable of delivering. And it was a good experience. So we did a podcast episode on it. I think it's coming out this week sometime. But I want to learn more about your experience. Why do you feel, what do you think are your biggest challenges sellers come across or when it comes to selling high ticket item in your experience? You've worked with many different sellers.
Yeah. So usually the biggest, well, there's really two that I find that I end up having to work with them on first, to almost like to bring those hurdles down, then I can rebuild, right, their skill set. And so the very first one is people have to learn how to control their own financial beliefs. And this is huge because we all have our own financial beliefs, but the goal is that it should never, ever, ever, ever pop up in the sales conversation. And so what I mean by that is, you know, how is money discussed in your home? If you're selling a high ticket item, especially if you're selling a high ticket item to a high net worth individual, so you most likely were not a high net worth individual. You probably didn't grow up that way, right? The average seller. And so some of the things that I have to work with them on is one, at least getting their financial beliefs under control. You know, how is money discussed in their home? Because if I can't get that under control, then what will happen is they will constantly be discounting their product, right? They'll discount it or they'll offer freebies and it's almost like they can't even help themselves. Right?
I've been there.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So I always tell people, you know, were you brought up where you would hear your parents say, turn those lights off, money doesn't grow on trees, or saying things like eat everything off your plate. You know, there's kids starving wherever. Right. So we all have financial beliefs. So a big part of being able to sell high ticket items effectively is you've got to make sure that when you feel yours creeping up, you've got to control it, right? Because it's never, ever, ever acceptable to be in the conversation. The second part is once I get through that, the second phase of it is I really spend a lot of time working and coaching salespeople on not using a one-size-fits-all approach. So just like we sellers have a process, well, buyers have a process as well. So we have to make sure that whenever we're working with a buyer, that we're coming to them correct, right? We want to speak to them and communicate with them in such a way that they're comfortable throughout the entire process. Because the minute you can get someone comfortable, they're going to open up and they're going to tell you pretty much anything you need to know. But if you can't get them comfortable, if you're communicating with everybody based on how you prefer to be communicated with, then what happens is you start to put the burden on the buyer. And the minute the buyer gets burdened, there's a couple things. One, confused minds don't buy. But two, they'll start to say things like, you know what? Okay, just send me the information. Or yeah, let me think about it. Or yeah, let me get back to you. And those are just words that basically say, this is too complicated to talk to you. Like I am being burdened and I don't have time for it. And so I'm going to shut you down in a nice, you know, nice way. But those are the little signals that we all have to just make sure that we're listening for, because really what that says is you're coming to the buyer in a style that makes sense for you, but does not necessarily fit your buyer.
You know, you bring up some great things there as far as with the, I guess, well, I'm going to call it just trauma, you know, sometimes in our families. And I grew up in a not so, let's say, economically challenged background. We had an economic challenge. We moved from Jamaica to here, and I found myself having some of those mindsets where it's like, oh, you know, I can't see somebody buying something for this much, or I didn't see myself ever spending that much money. So why in the world would I think somebody's going to want to buy that? And it was really hard when I went B2B and I was selling things for like, you know, $10,000 and so forth. In my mind, the most I've ever had was probably like a couple grand, right? And that was like huge. But then when you see like an item, somebody buying it within, you know, a few weeks for $10,000, I was like, holy moly. And when I was up to bat now, it was very difficult. And that limited me so much, Stephanie. It pulled me back so much until I was able to get past that. That's when I started to see a big difference in looking at it from a different mindset. And I think you did some great things with that. You also spoke about the other side of the house, really, with understanding the buyer. I think it's, you know, probably like on the empathy side of the house, right? Where you can see what they want. The platinum rule that I've learned is to treat others the way they would like to be treated. As opposed to the way that, you know, my boss said, I got to close this. So you got to sign on a dotted line today. You know, it's like,
yeah, no. Right. Today, you got to sign today. Yeah.
Yeah.
And absolutely.
Why do you feel that sellers fall in that category? Is it more so from the pressure from the company, or is it just what the lack of training, or maybe that's the way they've been taught? You've seen many different companies. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. And you actually hit the two main ones on the head. Here's the deal. The fact of the matter is that lack of training is a huge issue. It's, in my opinion, it's almost an epidemic, because what happens is, you know, when you look at companies, and I get the fortunate blessing to be able to be on both sides. So as a seller, I understand what the salespeople are going through. But then, of course, as a head of sales, I understand what the company, you know, the demands that they need. And then as a coach, obviously, I deal with the CEOs a lot, so I understand. So I've got a very good perspective. And one of the things I always share with sales leadership is really simple. Your people need to be trained on things other than just your product, right? Mm. And yeah, and that's really huge because most companies will feel like, oh yeah, our salespeople, they are really trained because they know the features and benefits of our product, the differentiators of our product, of, you know, the industry of our product, right? So everything that they're trained on has to do with just, you know, me, myself, and I, right? It just has to do with the product and the company and that kind of thing. So that gives them a disadvantage when talking to a customer because all they know is really things that pertain to them. And that's how you end up trying to squeeze people into your service, your product, whether it works for them or not, becomes a moot point because only thing you know is one side of the equation, just your product, right? So a lack of training is a big part of it. You know, one of the things I always share with executives is, listen, your sales team is the team that the one role that they have that nobody else in the organization has is they have to generate revenue. That is their job. Every other department, IT, finance, operations, everybody else is all about keeping expenses down, right? But at the end of the day, it's sales that has to bring the revenue in. That is their main job. Now, that said, since you're expecting them to bring in, you know, thousands, millions, hundreds of millions, billions, then aren't they worth training? Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You know, just humor me with this because what happens is people start to think of, oh, well, they're a great salesperson because they're got the gift of gab or they are friendly with people or everybody likes them. And that kind of stuff drives me nuts because sales, just like any other reputable profession, there is a skill to it. We do have to be trained on it. It's not just enough to be a good people person, right? Mm-hmm. That's not enough. It actually, to me, that dumbs down the profession so far below that it's so much more than that. There is a psychology of selling. There is a neuroscience behind the buying decision-making process and, you know, how the art of the communication. And there's just so much more depth to it. So when we think that it's just, you know, we're all good in sales because we're good with people, well, that's not necessarily true, right? So yes, I believe that sellers have a hard time with it because one, sometimes the companies haven't really invested in sales training and sales coaching because there is a difference. So I'm more on this side of sales training, yes, is important, but I'm more about sales coaching because that's where the behavior changes, right?
Yeah.
And so I believe that that's a big part of it. And then also, you know, as salespeople, we have to really always remember that school's never out for the pro. So, you know, we've got to make sure that our game is always tight and that we've got no holes there and that we're sharp and, you know, on the understanding what's new and improved. It's like, you know, if you go to a barber or a hairdresser and they haven't gone to any trainings, you know, in like years and you walk out of there looking like, you know, a hairdo from the Supremes or something because it's like, when's the last time you did like a class or something, you know? So the same is true for our profession. Right. You know, so it's just really important. And I have always been a believer, especially when I, you know, either led sales teams or now, obviously, when I work with companies with teams, I don't like the thought of having an ignorant sales force.
No.
Right. People have to have business acumen. They have to understand the business part of what it is that they do. And so, you know, when I work with leaders, I always say, well, do your salespeople know what the numbers are that you're trying to hit? They should know their number. Right. So that's the obvious. But yeah. Do salespeople actually know what is the EBIT number you're trying to hit as a company? You know, what are the things that, what's the growth plan? Do they know that? So when they're standing there talking to the customer, or better yet, in negotiations with the prospect, they kind of know what they can and can't do because they understand holistically the business that they're in and what's driving the business and the numbers behind the business and what it is and where it is the business is trying to go.
You know, so true on that. My wife and I, we were recently going to some doctors for just checkups and so forth. And you kind of shop around to some of the doctors, look and see which ones you like and so forth. And one of them, a couple of them were just like you said, which seemed like they haven't improved on anything for eons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you had other doctors who were up to date. It's like they read journals or they studied and, you know, kept up on par with information. And that was one of the biggest things we noticed with them. And something that helped us to finalize on the doctors that we have right now. And we're grateful for that you people that have that knowledge, people are continue to improve and to recognize themselves as a professional and not just like, you know, I'm done. I'm a doc, so I'm done for life. I got to keep moving. So I like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Exactly. And what you'll find too is the top salespeople, you know, within any organization, they are constantly sharpening their skills and being aware of what's going on, not just in their industry, but also more importantly in their profession, you know, as a sales, as a person who's, you know, developing in sales and whatnot, or growing in sales or mastering their craft, if you will. So school's never out for the pro.
No, and I promise you, those are some of the ones who are listening to this episode right now. Those folks who are just, they see it as their, they have a desire to continually to improve. They just always want to can get to the next level. And
excellent. That's fantastic.
Let's talk about when you first got into selling airplanes, selling jets. What were some of your, did you have limited beliefs or how did you fall into that?
Sure. So it's a great question. Because I start off as an Air Force brat, right? So mm-hmm. I grew up on active military bases my whole life. I was that kid that moved around every 2 years of my life from this base to that base in this base. Yeah. So I grew up around planes. And so I knew I wanted to do something in aviation when I, you know, just started my career. So I started off, you know, checking people in at the ticket counter for US Air, which is now American Airlines. I was down there, you know, slugging bags as well, loading up the bottom of the plane. So I definitely had to work my way up. Eventually got into sales for the airline. So I sold for Delta Airlines and American Airlines and some other airlines as well. And then I got recruited into private aviation, started out selling charter, then sold jet cards, and then got promoted, oversaw the sales team where my team sold charter, jet cards, private jets, full jets, you know, what have you. So our quota was nearly $1 billion each and every year. So
whoa, you said a B, right?
Yeah, billion with the B, exactly, right? So I know a little something about selling, right? And more importantly, teaching other people how to sell and really crush that quota. But, you know, the challenges that I had when I first got started was really going back to my own understanding. You know, I grew up a military brat, so there's no rich military brats, right? We don't, mm-hmm. you know, it just doesn't work that way. So it was interesting because all of a sudden I'm dealing with high net worth individuals. And, you know, these are the men and women who control the world's economy, right? Yeah. So I would go into their homes and, you know, being a home that I remember one specific situation. I walked into the person's home and the house looked really familiar to me as if I'd been there before, right? So the gentleman was very nice and his wife was like a model for Versace and, you know, it was one of their homes in Palm Beach, actually. I know
hey.
In Florida. Yeah, exactly. So I'm in there and I said to the wife, wow, this house looks so, it was a beautiful home, obviously, but it looked so familiar. And she goes, oh, well, you know, we were just on Architectural Digest today or like this week, whatever. And the reason why it was familiar to me is I had been looking at, you know, I'd gone to Barnes and Noble and I grabbed all these magazines over the weekend because my husband and I were doing some design work in our home and I was going to do it myself, right? And so I grabbed all these magazines to look and steal some good ideas mm-hmm. as far as interior decorating. So the reason why that house looked familiar is because it was the magazine that I looked at and then I turned all the pages and looked at the home. And so this was her house. Okay.
High net worth.
High net worth. Yeah. You're in the cover Architectural Digest. Then this is like quite the house. So she says, you've got to meet my designer. Now, let's keep it real, Donald, right?
like what designer?
Yeah, I come home with this designer who only knows how much he charges, right? My husband will have a heart attack while I'm standing there. So, but you know, those were some of the things I had to get over was I just was not from that lifestyle. And therefore, I had to grow and adapt and to learn that, you know, first of all, the 1% of the 1%, these are super nice people. I know they get a bad rap, but it's for the most part, they're really not. They're very gracious. And most of them were brought up, you know, middle class. And so they've worked their way up to a certain, obviously, a level of wealth, but really just good, normal people, right? So I had to get used to a couple things. One, being around people who had such wealth. And usually they also had, you know, PhDs from Yale and Harvard and that kind of stuff. So their business acumen was amazing. And they knew how to negotiate like you can't even imagine, right? So there was a lot of little nuances that I had to grow in myself and to really get better at when I knew that I was going to be dealing at that level. And a lot of their homes for their help were bigger than the homes that I was living in. Right? I was like, this is your help's home? You know, and I'm thinking, it's like twice the size of my house, right? So there was a lot of adjustments that needed to take place. But that's why I'm so passionate now about making sure when working with salespeople that if you're going to sell a high ticket item, and again, it doesn't have to be a jet or a yacht. It could be whatever your product is, if it's as long as it's the highest in the space. You just have to come to grips that you cannot bring your personal financial beliefs into the equation. You know, you really do have to act like you've been there, right? Yeah. So that was part of the challenges that I had, was just really finding my own voice in my own space and getting comfortable with that type of being around that type of client who had that type of wealth, because I'd never seen it before.
Yeah, I mean, this is it's eye-opening for on many different levels. And I especially with the, I think the term that I'm pulling away from this is my own, like your own financial beliefs. Like you just really have to get past that. And I think it doesn't matter what you're selling. When you can do that, when you can understand that part, then you'll be a little bit more successful. And what's the worst that's going to happen, right? It's if you're building value and like the, you know, your car salesman, you know, if you follow his example and you are so much focused on the client, you're going to know if somebody is not going to be ready for it or not. And for the most part, people are, if you're going after the right candidates, they can negotiate properly, or they'll just say if they don't feel it's a fit, it's a fit. And the world won't end, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's so true. And that kind of, you know, it's a very interesting point that you bring up, because when we as salespeople, you know, one of the things that we always talk about how we should be asking questions and things of that nature, and it's true, right? But there's a lot of science behind why we should be asking questions. And so asking versus telling. And a lot of times we just think it's more, you know, sales mechanics. But on the neuroscience side, there's a couple different dynamics going on. Yeah. One is when you ask someone a question, especially about themselves, right? There's a dopamine effect that the brain starts to produce. So they start to feel really good. That's why we all feel good talking about ourselves. Okay. Mm-hmm. And so we as salespeople, the more we can get people to talk about themselves and talk about the scenario and situation, not only does it, one, feed us a lot of really good information, but two, it allows the person to feel like, I really like that, Donald. There was something about him, right? The reason they liked you is because the dopamine, they've got, you know, they're gaga and goo-goo over you because they feel really good. You've made them feel really special, okay, by asking questions and listening. So that's the first thing. The second thing is when you think about just how the brain can process information. So you and I talk pretty fast. You probably talk, probably every salesperson talks pretty fast, right? We can talk, you know, at max about 300 words per minute, but the brain can process up to 3,000 words per minute, right? So the more, the disadvantage we have is if we're talking, because now the buyer can sit there, listen to us, but also be thinking about what's this guy got on? What am I doing for dinner? Like their brain can process a lot more stuff because they can process anywhere from 1,000 to 3,000 words per minute. We can only talk no more than 300 words per minute, right? So in order for you to get the competitive advantage, you should be asking questions. So they're doing the talking and your brain has the opportunity to listen, but then also, you know, be thinking about, God, I wonder what they meant with that, and explore and dig deeper and ask more questions to get a better clarity on what it is that they're saying. So there's science behind why we should be effective questioners versus the typical things that we learn in sales, which is, you know, ask, don't tell. Yeah, that, okay, that's obvious, but why?
Tell me why, please.
Yeah. Exactly. So I love when I'm working with my clients, whether it's an individual or a company, I get geeky about the brain stuff that is involved in sales. And that's why, to me, the profession, it's important that we're sharp and that we are, you know, we come correct to a client. We're not just kind of, I got the gift of gab and I'm going to wing it kind of thing.
Yeah. No more winging it. I had a trainer once tell me that. No more winging it. And I was like,
that's right.
I'm like, all right, we got it clear, loud and clear.
Good for you.
This was awesome, Stephanie. If there's one major takeaway you'd like listeners listening to this episode to walk away with, what's a one major piece of advice?
You know what? I would just say it's a very competitive market out there. And unfortunately, salespeople, you know, some companies churn and burn them. So literally, school's never out for the pro. So salespeople, whatever you have to do, if your company's going to pay for it, fantastic. If they're not, that's okay. Invest in yourself. But make sure that you always have the training and the knowledge and, you know, and the coaching. People that are going to hold you accountable, who have your best interest in mind. And just, again, always be out sharpening your game and your skill set, because it's a competitive market out there. So
I love that. I love it. If folks out there want to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to connect with you?
So they can go to stephaniechung.com. And then for any of your females, I actually have a book that they can download for free called How to Profit Like a Girl, A Woman's Guide to Kicking Butt in Sales and Leadership. They can download that book for free at profitlikeagirl.com.
Awesome. We'll put that stuff in our show notes, profitlikeagirl.com.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, all else, just go to stephaniechung.com and they can get some free resources and videos and newsletters and all kind of stuff.
Deal. We'll go ahead and take care of that. Put that in our show notes. You guys, you heard it here. Connect with Stephanie. Stephanie, thank you so much for taking the time to come on our show today. We really appreciate it.
Of course. It was my pleasure. Thanks so much for having me, Donald.
You're totally welcome.
Bye-bye now.
Tell you, boy, when I go to buy my jet, I'm going to call Stephanie and say, Stephanie, you need to give me some of the insights, man. I want to make sure I get a good deal, right? Do things right. And it sounds like if you go with the organization Stephanie was with, you'd be successful. Or if you learn from her, you'd definitely be successful. If you're an entrepreneur, I highly recommend you look at some of her content and start learning from her. If you are thinking about being an entrepreneur, check out some of the great things that Stephanie has to share and see if she's open, if she has an opportunity for you to be able to be coached by her to get your business to the next level. Highly recommend it. Now, as I mentioned at the top of the episode, I want you to check out Summit on Content Marketing. If you can make it, wonderful. It's an online summit. If you can't, totally get it. But you know what? The summit is from May 22nd through June 2nd. And yours truly, Donald Kelly, the sales evangelist, will be speaking at the event. So check it out. Get all the information in the show notes and register today. All in all, I do this because I want you to be successful. I want you to be happy. But most importantly, I want you to go out and do big things. That was Stephanie Chung, and I'm so thankful that she came on the show. If you want to connect with her, you can find all the information in the show notes. If you want to check out my podcast, the other show, The Sales Evangelist, you can find that as well down in the show notes. Appreciate you. And if you did listen to this episode in its entirety and you're like, you know, Donald, I appreciate this. I want to share it with other people. Please go ahead and do so. Thank you. And if you feel that the notion that you want to, you know, the inclination that I should leave a review and subscribe to this podcast, please go ahead and do so. As I'm doing the show, the main idea here is that we don't want to go around begging for a piece of the pie. We want to go out and create our own pie. Let's figure out what has worked. Find out from other people who look like us, who have been successful, and find out, like, how did they get to where they are and how did they succeed in sales? If I can pass that knowledge on to you, money in the bank, I'll be happy. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you also to our sponsors. If you haven't checked them out as yet, go ahead and do so. We have their information in the show notes and they're giving you some amazing offers. I want you to go ahead and check that out. As always, go out and do big things. I appreciate you listening to this episode today. There are many different things you could be doing, but you took the time to listen to this podcast. And for that, I'm truly grateful. If you haven't done so already, go ahead and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you're listening to this show. Our show is produced by TSC Studios. Our audio engineer is Jershon O'Bail. Artwork and video was designed by the one and only Destin Cunado. Our show note was created by Jake Ligmanowski. Our podcast production manager is Nancy Paul. You can find audio credits to each of our music inside of the show notes. And I'm your host, your coach, your guide down the sales journey, Mr. Donald C. Kelly, the sales evangelist.